Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360. And my guest this week is the one, the only, Dr. David Dykus. Welcome, Dr. Dykus.
Thank you, Adam. I am super happy to be chatting with you today.
Well, let me give everybody that's listening a little background to this incredible veterinarian and human being. Dr. Dykus is a native of North Georgia. Why did I say Georgia? Thinking of the movie It. He received his bachelor's degree from LaGrange College, where he graduated in the top of his class with a degree in biology and a minor in chemistry. He attended Mississippi State University's College of Veterinary Medicine. During his time at MSU, Dr. Dykus not only received multiple scholarships for outstanding academics, but also was actively involved with research. And I think I'm going to leave that there because there's so much that you've done that I want to talk to you about that I think viewers or listeners were really... it'll resonate really well with. So, you know, you're a veterinarian, which is phenomenal. Congratulations. You know, that's...
Thank you.
And so talk to me, did you start, because you're an orthopedic surgeon. So did you start practicing? Mm-hmm. Did you go right into internship? Tell me a little bit about your journey.
Well, it was interesting because I was not one of these individuals that knew they wanted to be a veterinarian from a young age. I decided to go to veterinary school when I was in college. And I was majoring in biology at the time, and my dad is a biologist, and I was on scholarship for baseball, and so I figured baseball would be my life. And one day he asked me what I plan to do in life, and I said, "What do you mean?" I said, "I'm gonna, you know, play baseball, teach baseball, do something." And he said, "It's kind of hard with just a bachelor's degree in biology to do a lot." He said, "So you need to be thinking about graduate school or professional school." I said, okay. So I went to baseball practice and I was, talking with my teammates and I was like, I got to figure out what I'm supposed to do in life once we graduate. And one of my teammates said, "Oh, what about vet school?" And I said, that's an interesting idea. I like animals. And so I went to one of my major professors and said, "I think I want to go to vet school." And he said, "Well, you probably need to learn what a veterinarian does." And so he got me a job at the local veterinary hospital in town. And once I started doing that, I realized how much I loved it and enjoyed it. And so at that point in my life, I didn't know specialization existed. I didn't know anything other than what I had been exposed to. So I got some large animal experience. I got some food animal experience. Thankfully, I had good grades in college. And then as an athlete, I had always had different injuries and things. So I'd always been to surgeons and orthopedists and physical therapists. And, you know, at the same time of thinking about veterinary school, I also thought, what about medical school? And then I saw all my buddies that were studying on the weekends for the MCAT. And I thought, oh, I don't want to do that. So I was like, veterinary school started looking a lot better at that point. So that's how I got to veterinary school. Was a decision about 3 years before I started veterinary school that I wanted to be a veterinarian.
So interesting. Yeah. I love it.
And then the surgery aspect of it is such that I've always loved orthopedics. I've always loved surgery because of my injuries myself I've dealt with. So first week of veterinary school, went up to my anatomy professor. And I said, "I hear that you can be a surgeon as a veterinarian. So I want to be a surgeon." And he said, "Well, let's get through the first month of veterinary school first, and then we'll talk about it." And so, so I went in wanting to do surgery. And I think it was that draw that allowed me to sort of lay out the plan for how that works and having mentors along the way. And not being afraid to say, this is what I want to do, and having those that wanted to help me achieve that. And so, you know, I was put into contact with the head of the surgery department, who became my mentor, who sort of laid out and said, okay, if you want to specialize, then you need very good grades in vet school. So it's a good thing we're talking about this the first year. You're going to need to do some things to stand out on applications, and then you're going to need to be involved in some research. And so he allowed me to jump into some of the research projects his current residents were working on, which really opened up the door from the research side, and that really helped me build a strong application for postgraduate education in terms of an internship and residency.
And so you went to, so you did a rotating internship at Auburn University, right?
I did.
And
I
then did. You back to MSU for a 3-year surgical residency.
You Correct.
Make it sound so easy.
It was not easy.
I
went straight from, once I graduated veterinary school, I went into my internship at Auburn, which was a rotating internship. I learned so much at my internship. It was amazing. It was tough. It was a lot of work.
Yeah,
it was stressful, but the amount of information that they instilled in me was great. And you know, as many out there know, especially if they've been trying to get into residency programs, how competitive it is. And so thankfully I was taking for a surgical residency outside of the match before the match occurred to go back to Mississippi State. And so I happily jumped on that train. And as part of my residency requirement, I also had to get a master's degree. So the university paid for my master's degree while I was doing my residency. So that worked out beautifully.
That's good. And I just am so fascinated with your career. This is what I love about this profession, is because, you know, you can go down so many different avenues, and then you became certified. So you're a certified canine rehabilitation practitioner, which is a CCRP program for those of you that may or may not know.
Mm-hmm.
And you did that through the University of Tennessee.
I did. So when I went through my surgery residency, because as veterinary surgeons are concerned, most all of us are trained in orthopedics, soft tissue, neuro, all facets of surgery. So when you finish your residency, you're more of a general surgeon. My mentors were very orthopedically oriented, and I had a natural draw towards orthopedics, which I tended to like more. And I also like the aspect of physical rehabilitation and fitness and early return to function. And so I, being from North Georgia, took a job back in my hometown in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And the kind of beginning or blossoming of canine rehab started with a couple of individuals, both Daryl Millis from the University of Tennessee, who's a surgeon there, and David Levine, who is a human physical therapist at the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga. So the two of them, along with a few others, sort of pioneered canine rehab. And so it just happened that David Levine was in Chattanooga, and I was in Chattanooga, and we crossed paths and became really good friends. And so that's where I was able to get my CCRP.
Hold on one second. And we're back. Okay. So, can you see me? You're good.
I can see you. Yeah. Can you see
me? Okay. Yes, I can see you. We're good. So what made you get interested more in the understanding, you know, orthopedics, canine osteoarthritis? You have so many great expertise areas on, you know, orthopedic mm-hmm. surgery, the patella groove replacement, the Paul technique, Cora, the list goes on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So once I had my CCRP, I started not really doing a lot of rehab, but I had that knowledge base for rehab. And my four sort of philosophy in life is sort of, I always want to strive to make things better. I want to not just become complacent. I don't want to take what I learned as a resident and just sort of do that for my career. I'm not one of these people that can show up to work, just do work, go home, live life. I think a lot of us that do a number of things in veterinary medicine work ourselves to death. I always wanted to strive for what was better. So I was always wanting to stay on the forefront of things, and, you know, continuing my learning and education was major to me. So any chance I got to take courses of emerging treatment modalities and techniques, I've always jumped on. So, you know, things like when the patellar groove replacement first hit the market, I jumped on course for there. As far as osteoarthritis goes, it's one of these things, I don't know why, but it always, when people always just said, oh, osteoarthritis, it was sort of this foreign thing to me initially, but it was so interesting because of what we didn't know about it. And so during my residency, I had to have a research project because as part of your residency program, you have to write a research paper. And of course, I was a graduate student, so I also had to have a thesis. So small world, when I was in veterinary school, part of my research was we had the program at Mississippi State, I had a long period off. And so I actually came up to Baltimore and did a research project or a research program with Nutramax Laboratories. Mm-hmm. And I was introduced to benchtop scientific-based research utilizing chondrocytes from a number of different animals doing research. And I really learned the analytical techniques and what's involved in an actual research lab. And I was able to start a project, and it ended up turning into a big project because when I left that after that 8 weeks, I started my residency, and thankfully Nutramax was kind enough to fund my research project for my residency. So what started out as an 8 week research project turned into about a 4 year large research project. So during my residency, I made several trips back and forth to study osteoarthritis and a number of different research techniques. And that's where I really, really dived into the scientific aspect of osteoarthritis, which I think as my career has progressed has allowed me to take those really complex theories and applications and you know, present it and teach it to individuals on an easier to understand basis and sort of try to drive the industry. My goal is to drive the industry for a paradigm shift. I want us to move from a retrospective management of osteoarthritis, meaning we start treating it after we've diagnosed it, to early recognition and intervention, meaning, you know, we identify those patients long before they have clinical signs or radiographic signs to implement lifestyle changes. And that's sort of what I want to strive to do to leave some degree of a legacy in.
Well, you're definitely leaving a legacy behind, that's for sure. But I agree with you as a general practitioner too. I'm all about being more proactive than reactive when it comes to osteoarthritis. You know, I mean, we talk about it in the 2-year-old Great Dane and we talk about it in the 6-year-old Beagle, you know, so it's things that we really want to get ahead of before it becomes a little bit too inflamed. Right. So I guess that makes sense.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And it makes up such a large population of our patients that we see. You know, with so many dogs being affected with osteoarthritis, we can certainly make a huge impact on improving quality of life. It's challenging, you know, from a general practice standpoint. Those in the trenches, I don't see how in the world they have 15 or 30 minute appointments.
No.
Because you got to cover everything. And it's like, oh my God, how do I cover OA now when I've also got to cover teeth and ears and vaccines and heartworm prevention and a number of and obesity and all these things. And it's so challenging. And so, you know, I give mad props to those in the trenches because, you know, my consults are anywhere from 60 to 90 minutes. And I like to sit and chit chat with the owners. I would not be a very efficient general practitioner. They would probably fire me after the first day. They'd be like, look, buddy, You're way too slow.
Hey, no, but you love to educate. I mean, that's what we do as veterinarians. It's just like in the trenches as general practitioners, you just get thrown into it. You just don't have the time to really delve into having a great conversation like you're talking about to pet parents on osteoarthritis. So, so cut to Veterinary Orthopedic Sports Medicine Group. Tell me a little bit about where you're at.
Yeah. So the practice I was at originally out of my residency in Chattanooga, I was doing some orthopedic soft tissue neurosurgery. It was a practice where I could have gotten complacent and stayed, which was great. But of course I wanted to advance and I also wanted to do just orthopedics. So I knew Sherman Canapp, who started VOSM, or the Veterinary Orthopedic and Sports Medicine Group, from my time as a vet student and a resident when I was visiting Maryland. And we crossed paths at a convention, and he said, we're looking for a surgeon, and we think you'd be a great fit. And I said, oh, this would be great. I just have to convince my wife to move to Maryland. and so got over that hump. But about a little over 5.5 years ago, moved to Maryland. I came to work at VOSM, and it was great because it allowed me to learn a ton. It allowed me to really start to set my pathway for the way that I wanted to manage things I wanted to do. And it also allowed as a stepping stone for me to start on the speaking circuit of teaching and lecturing. And so I'm super, super, super thankful for all the things I was taught, learned, experienced, was able to be part of while I was at VOSM. And then, as careers change, as people change, I finally felt like it was time for me to move on and do something differently. And so I'm in the process now of starting a multi-specialty hospital, which hopefully will have open in early 2021. And the goal was really threefold. Yeah. So what we were hoping to do is have not just a multi-specialty hospital, but have a large CE center, since there's not a lot of availability for large CE focused centers on the East Coast outside of, you've got the Aquindo Center in Las Vegas. And we also want to have a research component. And so my goal is to create a work environment that, number one, people love to go to, that it creates a really good work-life balance without burning people out. I want people to be happy. I want to take the technician role from being something where they're in for 5 years and burn out and leave the profession, to making it more of a career where people want to be, where they're involved, where they're being utilized appropriately. And so, pardon my French, but I want to hire a bunch of kick-ass people that want to have a lot of fun and want to push the envelope, that want to advance veterinary medicine, that want to educate people, that like to provide continuing education, that like to do research and basically just have a lot of fun. I've had some good experiences and bad experiences with corporate medicine. And so, I think I can take the things that I've learned that I like and don't like and try to really create a fun work environment. So plug for any of you out there listening. We are going to be hiring technicians, emergency doctors, specialists across the board. Wow. So if you have an interest in moving to the Baltimore area, we hope to have a lot of fun.
Where can I find information about that?
Well, right now, so the hospital is going to be called Nexus Veterinary Specialist. Nexus means a bond or a link. And so our hope is to create this sort of link and bond between the pet parents and the referring veterinarian and the specialist, but then also within the veterinary community and evolve. And so the website is going to be nexusvet.com, which isn't fully up and running yet. It's being built. We'll obviously have our social media presence, but in the meantime, people can absolutely follow along on my professional Facebook page, which is Dr. David Dykus, or my Instagram, which is ortho_vet, to keep up with things there. And then in the meantime, I'm probably going to be doing some mobile surgery until the hospital is open. And my focus or my vision on my part of the hospital is to really develop a bone and joint center within the hospital to focus more on complex orthopedic issues. So, joint replacements of not only the hip, but considering knee, ankle, and elbow, complex angular limb deformities. So we will have the ability to do a CT scan of a crooked leg, put that into a computer program, surgically rehearse the entire procedure in the computer, 3D print a plastic limb to look at and model, 3D print cutting guides that we can take into surgery, And then we can also 3D print the implants, stainless steel or titanium, to use in surgery. So we've working with a engineer to allow us to custom print implants to use. So that's one of our things there. And then a lot of minimally invasive fracture repair, arthroscopy, that sort of thing. So to really create a world-renowned bone and joint center within a specialty hospital is my long-term vision there.
Congratulations. I mean, that's absolutely fantastic.
Thank you. Thanks. It's a lot of work.
I can only imagine it's a lot of work, but I mean, I look back retrospectively looking at my patients that have had some sort of orthopedic disease, and it ranged, like you see it, from puppies to geriatrics. And, you know, those of you that are listening and that are veterinarians, you know, like, you can have so many different kind of incongruencies and fracture repairs. And as us, the general practitioner, some of us maybe take on that heavy weight to go ahead and tackle it. But, you know, when we're so busy in a pandemic like this, the best thing is just to leave it up to the professionals such as yourself to handle those kinds of cases. And what I love about even more, and this is what I have found in as the profession has been ever so evolving, is the fact that you and I would be working collaboratively along with the pet parent, which is so nice. It's not like I ship Mrs. Smith off to see Dr. Dykus and off she goes. It's a continuously keeping everybody loop. I call it the patient triangle, where it's like the pet parents at the top and you have the specialist and the GP at the bottom. And we just kind of work collaboratively together. And that's the beauty behind what you're doing.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I think open lines of communication of all parties involved is the best way, because everybody is trying to achieve the common goal. We want to improve quality of life of pets. And if they're in pain, we want to take that away. We want to make sure they live long, great lives to maintain the human animal bond. And so having the line of communication with the owner and the referring veterinarian is crucial. I think, you know, as a specialist, if you're trying to make it be the relationship between the specialist and the pet owner, that can only go so far if you're not bringing in the referring veterinarian. That's got to be sort of a, you know, everybody, let's go to dinner and have a few drinks and chit chat and make life good, rather than, you know, keeping one or the other out of the loop. Everybody's got to be in the loop. And when we work together, we're going to be able to provide such better care.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, those listeners too that are pet parents, you may not even know this, but there are so many instances where I would text Dr. Dykus, for instance, of a dog's gait and just be like, is this look odd to you? Or, you know, I can't figure out where the limping is coming from. Is it a left pelvic limb? Is it a right thoracic limb? I know, yes, there's a head bob. And these are conversations that the general practitioner has with the specialist that you may not even know about, that is because we genuinely care about the fur baby. And, you know, easily he would be like, yeah, it's definitely right hand leg. Definitely send it my way. We'll take it, we'll take care of it, whatever needs to be done. But that's the relationship that we've been doing. That's the newer normal in veterinary medicine nowadays.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's there's a lot, you know, with being able to snap a video on your iPhone and just text it or email it to somebody has really made things nice. And having digitalized radiographs, it makes life so easy just to get a quick, you know, under the table consult and really just even decide, is this a case that, you know, hey, this is simple, I can tell you exactly what you need to do and life is good, or say, oh, it's a little more complex, send it my way. And then, you know, we'll make sure everybody stays in touch so that we know that what the plan is and make sure everybody's on board with the plan to avoid confusion and that sort of thing.
Yes. I have to ask you, how has your team acclimated or adapted to the pandemic, knowing with PPE and curbside check-in? Were there any things that you have done that was a little different now?
You know, I've seen and heard of so many different ways this can be done. And so number one, in the summer, it's hot. And, you know, I'm not a fan. I love having the interaction with owners. I love to be able to talk with them. I think from the general practice standpoint, many of you get to develop that bond where you see the dog as a puppy and you get to kind of follow them through their life. And on my end as a specialist, my relationship with the owners are usually short term. And so I felt like it was difficult for me to, for an owner to bring a dog to me, they've never seen me before, They bring their dog inside. We examine the dog. I give them a call, say, this is what we need to do. Here's an estimate for surgery. And then, you know, fully grasp everything. So for me and my team, we absolutely do curbside. We're in, you know, all the PPE that we need. But rather than calling, I actually go out to the car, keeping socially distant, wearing PPE. But I've turned the parking lot into my exam room. I take my little bone models out there, and that way they can see me. They can see my bone model. So when I'm explaining things and why we're going to do what we're going to do, they still get that personal experience rather than a voice on the telephone, to try to keep that intimate relationship so that everybody knows what's going on. On my end, of course, I come home every evening with a sunburn on the back of my neck and the top of my head, and I'm drenched in sweat. But you know, it is what it is to make things work. I think we've all had to make changes and figure out new ways to do things. And so with us emailing a lot of documents and discharge notes to owners, I've also tried to put together short 1 to 2 minute videos that have x-rays that explain what we're doing. So that way when they get home, they can you know, just watch that, and it sort of refocuses their mind on the things we talked about and puts a little more perspective on things. So yeah, educational material in the form of visualization, I think has been helpful.
I love that. Excellent. I got to also ask you then too, you're a hardworking veterinarian. What does Dr. Dykus do for fun? What are some things that help balance him out so that way he's the best veterinarian he can be for his patients?
Right. Yeah. I have to run. I've for over a decade been a long distance runner. You know, I've done probably 10 or 12 marathons, 3 or 4 ultra marathons, tons of half marathons. And so it was funny. It's one of these things that brings my blood pressure down. Most all of my lectures are usually developed in my brain while I'm running. And then when I get back to my computer, I immediately open up my Keynote and start putting together a presentation. So it allows me to clear my brain. It allows me to relax. You know, when I was a resident, if I started to get cranky, the students would be like, did you run this morning? Or, you know, do you need a break to go for a run to calm down? So I try to stay active, and running is sort of my relief outlet there. And then I enjoy relaxing when I can, you know, sitting by the pool or,
it's got to be tough because you're a veterinarian, you're a husband, yeah, you know, you're a dad. So it's hard to wear all those hats and to come home when you have a hard day at work. We talked about this a lot on other discussions about this. And that's why we really do hone in on making sure that you take care of you.
Yeah. 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 And I try, you know, when I'm at work, I'm working. When I'm home, I try for it to be time with my wife and daughter. And then I have certain days of the week where I kind of use them as work days where I'm doing not clinically related things. And those are usually kind of more shorter half days where I get some work done in my home office and then spend the time with family and that sort of thing.
Excellent. I love it. All right. We have to have one last final segment is what I like to call 3,000 would you rather questions. Are you ready?
Are we going to get through all 3,000?
We're not doing 3,000 questions. We're just, there's a few. For the listeners, we want to get to know a little bit more about Dr. David Dykus. So let's see, what would he rather do? All right. So what was the one? Would you rather face a fork in the road or be forced to pick between three doors?
I want to take a fork in the road. And I'll tell you, because when you're given less options, you're usually more satisfied with the outcome.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that does sound good. Yes. Would you rather have friends more like you or opposite of you?
Oh, opposite.
Opposite?
Yeah, they're going to make me a better person, especially if they like to disagree with me, because I try to see other people's point of view. I think it helps me become a better person by appreciating that. If I'm surrounded by people just like me, I'm never going to change.
Right. Yeah. Would you rather Netflix or Hulu?
Oh, well, I'm going to pick both. Really? I want a Hulu for live TV, because I'll tell you, I'm a massive, and this is, don't tell anybody this, you can mute it, but I'm a massive Grey's Anatomy fan, and I've never ever missed an episode in 15 years.
Wow.
And so, and I have to watch it live, like when it's supposed to be on.
Yes.
But Netflix typically allows me to throw on a series and then binge it when I get a chance, or watch some movies. So I might lean a little more Netflixy. I usually watch it more than Hulu.
Wow. You were the only one that actually had to say like both. Everyone's like, oh, Netflix right away. Netflix. I love it. Dr. Dykus, thank you so much for your time.
Yes, thank you. I really enjoyed speaking with you.
Absolutely. And we are honored to have you as one of our DVM360 Editorial Advisory Board members for 2020 and 2021. So congratulations.
Thank you. I'm very honored. The group that's been put together is an amazing group of talented individuals from all walks of veterinary medicine. So I think collaboratively, we can really advance things and push things forward and continue to make things better.
Yeah, agreed. I'm ready. Let's do this. Thank you so much, Dr. Dykus.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.